So we're so happy to have you back with us. Darren and I are we're always grateful for the audience that we have and that you're taking time out to listen to our mission, and that is to help you start the revolution that's needed in your schools. So whether you're, no matter what role you're in, teacher, administrator, or if you're a parent, if you see something that needs that you think needs a revolution, not just a change or a shift, but if you see something that needs a revolution, we hope to serve, to help you start a conversation, help you be the spark that that starts the learner-centered change that your students need. So we're stoked to have a longtime good friend with us today. He has he's been a lot to us, been a lot to me, and just getting me jacked up and fired up about the work that we do. And he's here to share some of his work and his journey with you as well. And we're confident that at the end of this podcast, when he shares his contact information with you, you're going to reach out to him and connect with him on another level to help to make him part of your change journey. So, David, hey, what's up, man? How you doing today?
Oh, I am pumped. This is so exciting. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, great to have you here, David.
Absolutely. Without a doubt. So David, for the two or three people in our audience who may not know you or may not know who you are, won't you please share with us a brief synopsis of your career up to this point?
No, absolutely. So, yeah, my name is Dave Schmitto, and I'm up to a lot, to be honest with you. I'm a tired man, but I do it to myself, you know. First and foremost, father of four amazing kids. They go from middle school down to 4 years old. And as if that's not tiring enough, my day job, executive director, curriculum instruction, fancy title basically means I'm a chief cheerleader for teachers and principals in my school district. Get to support the work that they do day in and day out. I teach some classes at the higher ed level, and on the side, get to just talk to amazing people like you. And truly, that's what fills the passion, is just being able to connect with amazing educators, leaders, teachers, parents, principals from around the country. So that's me.
Well, we're glad you're here, man. How big is your school district?
You know, it's that perfect size. I tell everybody I am in the absolute sweet spot. I'm in a district that is just big enough, but small enough that every little change makes a huge impact. It's not one of those ones we have to bring together 15 subcommittees just to start the conversation. We've got about 2,300 kids. So we've got four buildings, two elementaries, a middle school, and a high school. Everybody knows everybody. Everybody feels like they're an expert in something. They've got their own lane that they can stay in, but yet we have to cross-pollinate to make magic happen. So, and in my role, I'm really in that sweet spot too. I feel like I've got the job where I can poke the bear, but then nobody comes running to me. They either run to their principal or run to the superintendent, and I can just keep on poking and keep asking the questions. It's really the sweetest job I've ever had.
David, share with us who you were, who you are, and who you hope to be. Beyond career, but this is to get to know David.
Yeah, that's pretty easy, to be honest with you. I've gone through an evolution as I've gone through the revolution. So, I mean, it's kind of crazy. Make that your new tagline right there.
I'm writing it down. I'm writing it down.
You know, I've evolved and devolved and gone round and round. As a kid, I'll go way back there and we'll play psychologist right now. I'll just pretend I'm laying on the couch looking up at you guys. I was super shy, complete introvert, and just kind of did things by myself, for myself. I was that kid I took pride in being the smartest kid in class. I mean, I skipped fourth grade, but yet I never went out there and I wasn't braggadocious. I just constantly wanted to be
serious? The
teacher.
Are you serious? Yeah. You were like,
yeah, you wouldn't think it now. I mean, back then I was smart.
We asked your friends. Yeah.
Right.
Wow.
Right. But I was always super shy. I went away to college, went to a college about 1,200 miles away from where I graduated high school. In my freshman year, I would cry myself to sleep at night because I was so alone and so shy and so introverted. Then I stepped into my career and something happened and I became the most arrogant, outspoken SOB on the planet. I was that guy at staff meetings that the principal would say, "Does anybody have any more questions?" And everybody's looking around saying, "Nobody better say a thing." I was the guy with the hand in the air asking five more questions about the fire drill, about the dress code, about whatever policy we had. I had to question it. And it forced me to kind of live within my own bubble. Luckily, I had some great advice given to me by some very influential people. And as a result, I feel like internally I've shifted. I no longer feel like I have all the answers because I'm starting to realize just how dumb I am. And now I feel like I'm the guy with all the questions. I'm no longer the guy that I feel like I have to tell everybody my two cents. I'm the one that just wants to ask what everybody else thinks. And it's real right now. It's authentic. I'm finally comfortable being completely vulnerable and saying I don't have a clue about things, whereas for so long I put up the facade like I had to have the answers to everything. And it's freeing. And the person I want to be is that person that is just 100% transparent all the time, totally comfortable with who I am, not striving to try to make myself seem like I'm anybody that I'm not, not constantly trying to chase the Joneses or looking for the grass to always be greener. I just want to be at peace. And I'm getting closer.
You mentioned about having all the answers and then started being that guy that has all the questions. Where you are in your journey now, what's more important, questions or answers, and why?
You know, it's interesting. So right now, I've got a placard outside my office that says I'm a boss of some people. I'm a designated leader. And what's interesting is I have learned that you are a stronger leader if you have more questions than if you have more answers. You know, the leader that pretends to have all the answers has very few people seeking them out for those answers. But the person that's willing to ask the questions and learn alongside somebody who is just there to refine somebody's thinking, to tease out the solutions that other people bring to the table, you have an unlimited amount of people that seek you out for your support because they no longer think that you're there to judge, to evaluate, to condemn, or to simply always throw your cards on the table because it's no longer about you. And for so long, that was a struggle. I stepped into everything. I mean, I came in, was it Miley Cyrus that came in like a wrecking ball or whoever came in like a wrecking ball? I mean, that was me. I came in saying, you're going to know who I am and what I stand for come hell or high water. I mean, this is Schmitto 101. And it's freeing now not to have to be that guy. But it's also exhausting because now that I'm not, I feel like, man, I am constantly asking questions. I am constantly there to support other people. For so long, I was so lonely and had all the answers. Nobody wanted to hear them. And now I feel like I'm spinning right now talking to people because I'm willing to say I don't have a clue.
So, David, I think life, school, but in this case, life is about iterations. So I'm real curious after just hearing you explain these items, what was the change that took place or what was the kind of the antecedent that took place for you to change?
So I'll take you back again. So I graduated college with my undergrad in 1999. By 2001, I thought I was going to be the greatest principal ever. I graduated in 99, stepped into teaching for 1 year and thought, man, I've got this figured out. I can go out there and lead anybody, anytime. Went and got my master's by 2002. So having taught 2 years and applied for principalships all over the place, went on 16 job interviews that summer, 16, did not get a single call back.
Wait, I'm sorry for interrupting.
Yeah, you're fine.
Principalships or assistant principalships?
No, principalships, principalships. There was no stepping stones for me. I had it all figured out. 16 job interviews, not a single call back. And most people would look at that and say, man, I'm just not ready. Let me do some reflection. Let me figure out what I still need to learn to grow. I looked at it and I was just ticked and thought, this is why schools are broken because they don't see greatness. They don't understand what they're giving up on. So instead of sitting back and reflecting, I decided I'm going to go to law school and I'm going to become a lawyer that represents kids suing school districts because I see how dumb schools are. And I went to law school and I was telling everybody and their brother why I was going. And long story short, at this time I was teaching at a pretty large school district just outside of Detroit. And the HR director found out about what I was doing and called me into his office one day. And first of all, it's never good when the HR director knows you by name in a large school district. It could either mean that you are the next coming or you're the next one out. He called me in and he said that he knew about me, not because I was a great teacher, but because I was always running my mouth. And he said, he just wanted to give me some advice. He said, I needed to stop looking for the next best thing and just start appreciating where I was. He said, if you think you can be a great principal, you're not even a great teacher. And I know you're not a great teacher because nobody's ever come to me and told me what a great teacher you are. And the great teachers have legacies and reputations, and you have neither.
That is hilarious.
It was a smack across the face.
That's right. That's good.
But it wasn't until about 10 years later that it dawned on me how right he was. You know, I took his advice and I said, okay, I'm going to double down. I'm going to show him. I'm going to show him how great I can be as a teacher. And I went out and I killed it as a teacher, but not because I was focused on the kids. It's because I wanted to show him what I could do. But then I started to move up, if you will. I put that in air quotes. Got some prestige. And I'll be honest with you, it kind of went to my head. I got some awards, and the awards were always behind me. And every interview I did, I wanted to make sure everybody knew about the awards that I got, when all of the awards were about the people that I worked with. And it was about a year and a half, 2 years ago, I mean, fairly recently, that it kind of all just came crashing down inside of my own head, where emotionally I realized I just couldn't put on this show anymore. I could not put on this facade of being the guy with all the answers, doing it all. And I just came crashing down and just being totally real. Ended up having to go get therapy and go to counseling and get put on medication, like the whole nine yards, because the facade and putting on the show just got so intense. And finally getting to the point where I was able to just open up and say, wow, here's all my flaws. Here's all the stuff I've been hiding from people for so long. On a personal level, allowed me to realize that it's okay to have, I don't even want to call them flaws, but to have imperfections, to have things not all figured out, and to have to lean into other people and to show up for these regular counseling sessions without all the answers and without the script already planned, just questions to ask and asking for advice and guidance. It was so liberating and freeing. And I said, wow, I want to do this all the time. And I've completely flipped who I am as a result. And it is absolutely crazy. I mean, you can see the trajectory of things in my personal life and my professional life going on this path. When one is in sync and one's in line, the other one seems to follow. And honestly, who I am right now is completely different than who I was even 3 years ago. And I'm so much more at peace about it.
Yeah, that's powerful. It just really is. Let's segue that question or transition it into Bold Humility, your book.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing that Bold Humility has to do something too with yourself.
Yeah.
So everyone has, the title of a book has some significance to it. So why don't you explain that and then tie in your book with that title?
Yeah. It's interesting because the book started being written before I went through this major transformation. It's, you know, you guys have written book before and you know the process is a lengthy one. And the book started off being written as almost, you know, the term manifesto is thrown all over the place, but I wanted it to be a book all about how great I was and all the leadership lessons that I've lived. And I thought everybody's going to read it because I'm Dave Schmidto. But first of all, nobody knows who Dave Schmidto is. Let's just put that out there. Nobody cares who Dave Schmidto is. Even if they did, at the time, I was making mistake after mistake after mistake. So the lessons I was throwing at people were idiotic, to say the least. As I started going through some of my transitions, though, I realized that the lessons I was learning and more importantly, the mistakes I made were probably going to be more powerful for people than me sitting down and trying to be an expert in anything. So Bold Humility is really my focused effort to say, just be humble. Go out there and say what works, but more importantly, say what doesn't. Talk to people about the mistakes that you've made so that they don't chart that same course. When you're willing to stand up in front of people and expose your soul and say, this is me, and here's how clumsy I've been, here's how shameful I've been, it makes you more approachable. People willingly come to you because they say, oh, this is a real person. And Bold Humility, yeah, it talks about some of the successes I've had, but more importantly, a lot of the mistakes I've made along the way and things I could have and should have done differently to put kids and people first. I mean, I'm the guy who every decision I've ever made, I have said it's for the sake of kids. As an educational leader, as a teacher, I always said it's for the sake of kids. But oftentimes I use that term as an excuse to not put teachers first and not put parents first. It's a cop-out. I mean, we can say we're doing everything we want to put kids first. And then as a result, push teachers to the side, push parents to the side, push the community to the side, because we can couch anything we want to with whatever excuse we want. But if honestly, if we're putting teachers first, if we're putting parents first, most of the time, it's going to be good for kids as well. And that's one of those lessons I learned. I was always putting myself first and my own agendas, and I would phrase it in these little packages so that people couldn't have any defense against it. And I look back now and I can just identify hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of mistakes I've made and hundreds of ways that I covered it up and explained it and rationalized it. And it's kind of embarrassing, but I'm putting it on display now so that people can say, yeah, it's real. These are the mistakes people made. Avoid it, learn from it, and grow from it.
Sorry. I had I was in a conversation the other day, and the person, I forget how we got onto this, but the person said, never trust a leader who doesn't show you his limp. I think that's such a drastic change for how, at least I was trained, prepared for school leadership. We had to project almost invulnerability, you know, just almost perfection, that kind of thing.
We were told never let them see a sweat, right?
Yeah, never let them see sweat. That's exactly right. When you're talking to people these days, David has a podcast, he's going to share this at the end, but in your talks and your presentations and whatnot, do you still see that as the case, as people want to see the leader as a perfect or as invulnerable, and if they don't see that, they don't have any trust?
No, honestly, that's what's interesting. So, in my role, I talked about how my job right now, I'm in that sweet spot, and honestly, everybody in wherever they are in their career, whatever their position, we're all in a sweet spot. That sweet spot meaning we always have somebody above us and somebody below us in a hierarchy. Where my struggle was, where I was making a lot of my mistakes, is I was always looking to the people above me, trying to please them, as opposed to the people below me or next to me. I was constantly thinking, what does the person in the suit want me to do? And what dance can I do to make myself look bigger, better, more prepared for the next level? So that they'll look down at me and say, yep, that person's ready for the next promotion, as opposed to me just leaning in to the people that I was working with and serving. And I mean, honestly, even over the last year and a half, 2 years, I've had people that knew me, and they knew the old me, who have said things like, Dave, I know this is all just an act, this whole humility thing, this vulnerable thing. You're doing it just to try to manipulate the narrative. You want people to think that things have changed just so you can try to convince them of your way. And I get why they think that, because way too often as leaders, we feel like it's our job to control the conversation, to manipulate the outcome, to put the yes people in the room, to find the people that are going to support our goals and our initiatives and our drive, and then project that forward. And I was a person, I'll be honest, I used to practice the leadership mantra that the leader doesn't make the decision, the leader only finds the people to sit around the table to make the decision. So I would bring people together when I had a big decision to make up, and I would strategically go find the people that I knew would say yes to my decision. And then I could argue, hey, I've got all the right people in the room. I had a lot of people helping me make this decision. But the reality was, it was all the people that I picked to sit around the table because I knew that they would support my decisions. And I could justify and say, hey, I had a lot of people weigh in on this. Well, no, I had the right people weigh in on it. And that's cowardly. That's so cowardly. But that's the way I would live. And that's the way I would lead. That's the way I made decisions, is I wanted to control the outcome. No matter the situation, no matter the issue, whether I was an expert on it or not, I wanted to be the final say. And man, I look back on it and say, the opportunities that were missed for kids as a result of that. And I know there are people out there that struggle with the same thing.
Oh my gosh, yes, yes. That's entirely it. But isn't that the case now, though? I mean, we come into this profession with, I think, the best ambitions and the best intent, but we still rely on that top down heavy model to get things done. I mean, that's the I think that's the leadership model that we see and that people want. I don't think a lot of people are ready for people have to be trained and mind shifted on the collaborative leadership mindset.
I think leaders need to be trained on the collaborative mindset. I think the led want that, honestly. You know, I think let me just talk through my own personal journey. I felt like once I finally made that transition to from classroom to administrator, I felt like I got the promotion because of how great I was. And I needed to make everybody else into these itty bitty schmitties, these people that were just like me, because, hey, after all, somebody promoted me. So if they want to be successful, they just need to do it the same way that I did. And I know that there are teachers out there that probably have that same mindset where we look at the kids in our classrooms and we say, hey, I'm successful. If you want to be successful, do things the same way that I do. You know, whether it's, hey, write in blue or black ink, or trim those hairy edges off the paper, turn things in on time, put your name in the upper right hand. We have all these ridiculous rules that we just come up with because it's better for us, because it works for us, and after all, we're successful. And that's the same thing that administrators do. That's the same thing that leaders do. But it's interesting when you get yourself into conversations and into collaborative groups amongst teachers that just want to be heard. When they start to believe that you're truly going to listen to them and they're going to support their decisions, that, oh man, they are hungry for it, and they will just open up and they'll start sharing. They have some amazing ideas if we let them talk and if we truly support their decisions. But I think oftentimes, because we have put so many people, like I was, in leadership positions, teachers, staff members, truly don't trust that they're going to be heard. They don't trust that their voice is going to matter. So it's easier just to go along with the flow.
So David, you kind of talked about a couple times here, you're in a sweet spot. So if you could just kind of tell people, just what does, you know, what do your jobs look like now? But my question to follow up with that, I want you to answer, deals with, we usually ask the question at some point, you know, what revolution do you want to see take place in education? But I want you to talk about what revolution do you think needs to take place in higher education?
Woo, time to preach. All right, Darren. So my role now, right now, I kind of have the dual role as we talked about a little bit earlier, but officially now, my role in higher education is growing. It's expanding. So for the last 5 or 6 years, I taught some classes as an adjunct in a small private college in the Midwest. But going into this fall, I'm really going to be working 2 full-time jobs. And the second full-time job, aside from the curriculum director job that I've got in my school district, I'll be working as a full professor in educational leadership at a college in Michigan, a public institution in Michigan. And I'm super excited about it for a lot of reasons. But one of the reasons goes beyond just the teaching. It's because of the research that I get to do and the research agenda that I get to create, because I get to choose what to study. I get to determine what things to bring to the surface. And there are some powerful, powerful things in play. And I'll just tell you flat out, the thing that I'm going to be studying, the stuff that really drives me, is the assistant principalship and how we treat the assistant principalship as a stepping stone position in education. Right or wrong, we do. And I know that that is something that is extremely important to study, because number one, nobody studies it. There's one person in America that has studied it in the last 50 years. Her name's Catherine Marshall from North Carolina. She's the only person that's put any interest whatsoever in the assistant principalship. But the assistant principalship is the culture builder. They're the driver in most schools. They're the ones that know every single kid. They're the ones that teachers will go to and turn to and confide in. And yet very rarely do we pour into them other than to say, assistant principal, live within your box and do things the way that I do as a principal or as the leader, and you'll get promoted as well. That's what I want to change. I want to change that mindset that we have to play follow the leader leadership. And I want to make sure that people understand that they can create new identities, that they can be true to who they are. They don't have to play follow the leader leapfrog to move up, move sideways, move out, whatever the case may be. I want leaders to be able to own who they are, and I want them to grow into who they can be.
Because you're right. When I talk to people, I tell them all the time, my most favorite job in the world was as an assistant principal. I just have fun. My passion is principalship, but my favorite, my learning curve just shot as an assistant principal. Great mentors, great opportunities.
But you know what's interesting, and I'm going to turn it on you real quick, Derek, but you said that was your favorite job, but yet you're not in that job anymore. It's interesting, right? Because I would say the same thing. I had a blast as an assistant principalship.
A blast.
I loved it, but I also knew it wasn't where I wanted to stay. You know, for some reason, I wanted to go somewhere else. And I don't know if it was a pride thing. I don't know what the issue. I can probably give you 1,000 issues. But I loved it, but I wasn't content. And right. I don't know.
Well, I know for me, it was, I didn't realize at the time how much I was enjoying it and how much I was enjoying learning on the job. I'll say that piece. I knew I wanted to be a principal, you know, maybe my 6 year in kind of thing, because I liked the principal role model that I had, and I wanted to have the impact that she made. But so that was my goal, to work towards that. But I don't think I appreciated my time, my 4 years as an assistant principal. I didn't relish that time like I should have. It was something else. Now, you know, and having said that, the two principals that I worked under as assistant principal, they were relationship builders. They were consensus builders. One showed an incredible amount of transparency and vulnerability, but they were both genuine people. I wonder how much of that message is getting out in secondary education and graduate programs and our school leadership prep programs, to the importance of knowing yourself, not just be transparent, because we could say that all day long, but know yourself, be grounded, and bring that to the table.
Yeah, I think it completely varies, to be honest with you. I think the way that schools and districts are set up across the country, there's so much variance in how things are run. So where I currently work up in Michigan, we have a lot of small districts. We have 700 plus school districts in the state of Michigan. Wow. And as a result, a lot of administrators transplant themselves from one district to the next as they're looking for jobs. Move farther south, Florida, for example, where there's countywide school systems, they develop these principal pools where the training ground is learning the bureaucracy of your current system. And it's a self-fulfilling pool that's constantly growing from the teachers within. Those assistant principals, their training is learning who the HR director is, learning who to file grievances with, who is in charge of maintenance and grounds, and not necessarily leadership development, but more how to survive in that system. And I don't know which system is truly the better system, whether it's you want people that are transplanting themselves in and out of your district, or do you want the one where you're growing people from within, but they're not learning other ways to do things, or only learning about the perpetuation of the system. I don't know. But one thing I do know is we need to get people to be content with where they are and living within their strengths, as opposed to constantly seeking to do more, be more, grow more. I'm constantly trying to get better, because I want to get better, because I think that we can be better. But I want to get myself to that place where I don't feel like I always have to go somewhere else to find it.
So Dave, I'll fire out one of our final questions here, because just talking to you before we did this, I thought you had an interesting phrase that you talked about. You said obstacles, turning obstacles into opportunities. So obviously we're going, at the time of this recording, we're going through the pandemic. Things are starting to open up a little bit in some places. Maybe not so much in Michigan, but just take us through that. Kind of your thought process with that phrase.
So there's going to be people that are mad at me right now, but I'll just give you a simple, stupid example. An obstacle turned an opportunity. As we're recording this, I'm actually sitting in Florida, something I wouldn't have been able to do if I still had to show up to work in my day job in Michigan. And it was just snowing 2 weeks ago in Michigan. So coming to Florida, I mean, this is an amazing opportunity. It came from that obstacle. But the reality is, I mean, we hear about all these things right now in schools that we're able to focus on. You know, the old saying that pressure doesn't cause leaks, it simply reveals them. It's kind of what we're doing right now, is a lot of amazing things are being revealed and a lot of struggles are being revealed. There's very little newness that's being amplified right now. Those teachers that we already knew were highly effective and amazing with face-to-face instruction, guess what? They're amazing and they are superstars right now with virtual instruction. It's simply being magnified, because they were the ones that focused on their kids. They're the ones that are picking up the phone and calling little Johnnies and little Susies, making sure that they're okay. They're the ones going above and beyond to make sure that they have some real-time instruction, some face-to-face learning going on. They're the ones doing the drive-bys, sitting in the driveways with the kids, whatever the case may be. They're still doing it. It's being magnified. But on the flip side, we're also starting to see issues with equity. We're seeing those issues with grades. we're seeing issues with things like pacing guides and fidelity and, well, how am I supposed to finish my year if I don't have access to my textbooks anymore? Well, guess what? You get to teach now. You get to focus on the focus. You can identify the essentials. How are my kids supposed to be motivated to do the work if I can't grade them anymore? Well, guess what? If your grades were simply compensation before, there was a bigger issue. I mean, conversations right now that we can have with people because of this are huge. And far too often when we try to approach these conversations in our staff lounges and our staff meetings, when we're not dealing with a crisis, it turns into personal agendas and your opinion versus my opinion. Well, right now we can all blame COVID-19 for these conversations. We all have a common enemy that's forcing us to have the conversation. So now our conversation needs to shift onto, of these things that we're doing right now that are different, what are essential in the fall? What do you want to hold on to and how do we preserve that? Which honestly needs to be the conversation we have every single spring. Every single spring, we need to be having the conversation about what do we hold on to? What are those things that we know worked? And then the rest, let's dabble and experiment. Every spring, we need to be focused on holding on to what works and then changing the stuff that doesn't. And right now, that's the conversation. If in August and September, we're not still talking about essential learnings and power standards or whatever you want to call them, the focus and things that are those non-negotiables, and we're going back to pacing guides and making sure everybody's on page 16 on September 16th, shame on us. If we're not utilizing some of this technology like Zoom meetings to have parent-teacher conferences and to have some of our get-to-know-you meetings so we can eliminate those barriers to access, shame on us. These are opportunities that are truly emerging from the obstacle that we're dealing with.
I love it. That was when we ought to, we say all the time that, you know, from every challenge, from every trial comes a triumph. And when you go to the gym and struggle and work out, you come out better. So when we work through this whole thing right here, we have to be strong. We have to be stronger and smarter because things have to be different. We just got to figure out how they're going to be different.
And you got to manage the pain. I mean, I know, Darren, right before we recorded this, you were working out, but you understand the difference between good pain and bad pain, right? You know, if you got a stress fracture that's growing and you continue to work that out, it's going to cause an injury that you're not going to be able to recover from, or you're just going to stop altogether. And that's kind of where we have to, as leaders, that's our charge right now, is we have to manage the pain. We have to make sure that it's uncomfortable enough to lead to growth. If it's just causing constant damage, we keep hitting the same muscle, the same source of pain day in and day out, it's going to cause an injury that we're not going to be able to recover from. So we have to be smart. Our job right now as coaches, basically personal trainers, we got to figure out what's good pain versus what's bad pain.
Yeah, and I think when you look at pain too, I think you look at it as you talk teachers, the good ones are doing it great right now too. And for those that are struggling, they have some pain, but they don't want to address the pain. They want to go to where it's a little painful, but then they stop. Whereas those that are killing it, it's painful, but they're listening. They're going to the next level. So yeah, great points all the way around. David, I love the talk. Just love how real this has been. Just appreciate everything that you talked about through this episode that we've done. We need you to tell people how do they connect with you and find any of your materials.
All right. Well, I'll do something a little bit different. Let me start with my phone number because that's easier for people to remember. And yeah, it's my real phone number. Text me, call me. I don't care. I have no friends. So you calling me gets me one person closer. Phone number 734-377-3457. Challenge me. See if it's really me. My contact is pretty easy. As long as you can figure out how to, Darren's getting ready to challenge it. I see it. Phone's out. My contact information, as long as you can figure out how to spell my last name, you can find me anywhere. Cause I am at Dave Schmitto. It's Dave as in Dave, and Schmitto is Schmitou. You can find me there on Twitter, Instagram, website. Just track me down. Oh, I got a text. Howdy. Got it. See, it's really, that's me.
Boom. Mic drop.
So there you go. That's where you find me.
Folks, that's what we do here. We verify information so that you don't waste your time. Dave, we appreciate you being on, man, truly. And again, we'll assure our audience has full assurance that we're going to have you back on later on because we want to hear more about your journey, particularly with how you're going to help revolutionize and change the school leader prep at the next level. So thanks for what you do, man. And for our revolutionaries out there, please listen, share this podcast out, share this episode out, subscribe to our podcast, follow us at our Facebook page, stay in touch. We're here. If we're not helping you change the education in your school, then we're not doing our job, and we want to commit to making a difference in your school. Thanks, Dave. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Dave.
Hey, thanks for listening to our podcast today. We are committed to changing what we do for the betterment of our learners.
I also want to encourage you to check out our book, The Revolution. It's time to empower change in our schools. Make sure you check it out on Amazon. And also check out future or present podcasts that we have within this Revolt Lab. And please feel free to leave some comments or even rate it on iTunes or Android.